This is Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is Pets and Vets.
Free advice for animal lovers across the UAE.
We are doing exactly what it says on the tin. We are doing Pets and Vets. Dr. Katrin Yarn, owner and general manager and head veterinarian. I knew I was going to get that wrong. As I looked at the word, I knew I was going to get it wrong. Say it. How do we say it?
Veterinarian.
Yeah, I'm not going to try it. Head vet at the German. No, it's come up again. The word's come up again.
Just don't say it.
The German Veterinary Clinic.
Perfect.
In Abu Dhabi. Who knew that that was going to be my troublesome word? I know one person who couldn't say, my husband can't say it, inventory. He says inventory. And every time he says inventory, I want to hit him. Obviously, it doesn't come up that often, just when we're moving house. So it might have something to do with moving house. Anyway, lovely. Thank you for joining us.
It's fabulous
to have you in the studio, as
lovely
always.
Lovely to be here.
I'm going to start with asking you about my Persian cat.
Oh, okay.
So I've had the Persian cat now for 4 months. She's a foster cat. She's very big. She's very furry. She's about two. First of all, she was beautifully well behaved because clearly the lady who fostered her knew how to behave with cats. But recently she started not using her litter tray. Mm-hmm. Instead, she likes to wee on my son's bed. Just one of the sons. In fact, the one that she likes more than the other one. And in the bath. Mm-hmm. Why is she not using her litter tray like a normal cat should?
Yeah. And this is a really common thing that we face with cats. And it's very often a sign of anxiety or stress. It could also be because she doesn't particularly like the location of the litter tray or the substrate that's in the litter tray. So for cats, resources are really important, and their litter tray is one of their primary resources. So they should always have plenty of those. And we recommend that you should have number of cats in the household plus one. So if you've got one cat, you should have two litter trays. The same goes for feeding stations and water stations. So a good start could be to offer an additional litter tray and put it somewhere different in the house, perhaps have it be a slightly different size and shape. So maybe if it's got a sort of a high rim at the moment, maybe get a shallow one, perhaps get a slightly larger one. If you've got an uncovered one, maybe get a covered one, or vice versa. So there are lots of things you can do actually with the litter trays. If that still doesn't help, then it would be time to sort of look at what else in the environment might be causing her stress or anxiety.
My four-year-old son,
for example.
So I just get rid of him and then we'll
blame
be fine.
Him,
you'll be
my
fine.
Exactly. Blame him,
so
of course.
So I just need two litter trays and to get rid of my four-year-old.
And you'll be fine.
Brilliant. All right, then I will take note of that. Should I put the second litter tray in the bath where she keeps on weeing?
Maybe in the bathroom. Not in the bath, but maybe in the bathroom.
Okay.
Put it on a different story, on a different floor in the house or the apartment.
I can't tell you how annoying it is.
I can totally understand that, yeah.
People who have pets in the house who just start sort of weeing and pooing in the house, it just really annoys you. You're just like, why do I have a pet?
Yeah, and it's one of the biggest reasons that pets get abandoned or get, you know, given to shelters or you know, released on the street. It's one of the biggest reasons, because absolutely, it's, you don't want to be coming home after a busy day at work, you know, to be cleaning up poo and pee all over the place. Mm. But it's one of the sort of, in my line of veterinary behavior work, it's one of the most common things I see. And there are lots and lots of solutions. And we also have anti-anxiety medication for cats and dogs.
No, yep. Come on. Really? Do we really give anti-anxiety drugs to pets?
Absolutely.
I can't believe it.
Pets' mental and emotional health is becoming a huge, huge topic.
Wow.
And, you know, where sort of human mental and emotional health has only just really become something that's talked about, and the stigma is not so big anymore. The veterinary world is catching up slowly. So we're a few years behind human mental and emotional health, but it's the same in pets, absolutely.
So Danny's going to be a lot nicer about this.
Well, yeah, of course.
Because I think it's crazy. Come on, they're animals.
But they experience fear and anxiety just as much as we do. And that's where the problems really come from, because when they're scared, that's when they'll kind of escalate their behavior to try and protect themselves. And that's when we get dogs that become aggressive. And that's when we get cats that pee in the house. So it's a really big and important topic. And it's something that we really need to think about really carefully.
So what are the kind of most common triggers then that might cause kind of heightened anxiety in one of your pets?
I think the environment that we live in is pretty challenging. So, you know, living in a very highly populated urban area with lots and lots of other dogs and cats. So again, it's that whole thing about territory, space, resources. Sometimes it can be bad experiences. A lot of times it can be, so dogs and cats have very specific socialization periods when they're puppies and kittens. And the experiences they have in those weeks will help to shape their future behavior. So if, for example, a puppy hasn't been socialized with other dogs or with humans in those first 12 weeks of life, that could significantly impact how they behave towards those things.
That's fascinating that as well, because back home in Liverpool, we have a German Shepherd in our family. And when she was a puppy, she was extremely friendly. But I remember maybe when she was about maybe 3 months old, she was attacked by a bigger dog in the park. Fortunately, we were there, managed to separate them. No physical damage was done. But then following on from then, she'd always get quite anxious around other dogs, particularly bigger dogs than her. Not many now that she's fully grown as a German Shepherd, of course. But it's interesting, whenever I go home and I take her from a walk, I can still see she's still quite anxious with others. And I'm convinced it's down to that moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. You know, those experiences that they have, you know, that she's going to think the next time she sees a big dog, gosh, you know, last time the encounter wasn't too pleasant, so I need to do something to keep this dog away from me. So that's when sort of the body language changes and the behavior changes to try and increase distance between herself and the other dog. And that can escalate all the way up to then barking, lunging, you know, being aggressive and all that kind of thing. So it's a big, 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 big topic.
Huge number of questions already coming in. Tanvi in JLT says, our cat keeps eating the dog's food. These cats, you know, pain in the bottom. I pick up the cat when he's eating the dog food and put him by the cat bowl. He starts eating the cat food. Then 5 minutes later, I find him eating the dog food again. I love this program. I tried switching the cat food to the same flavor of the dog food, but he still preferred the dog food. Is this a major issue? Could it have any health implications with each food being specifically designed for the different animals? The temptation's just to cave, right? And go, right, I'll just
have
dog
the dog food.
Food.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, actually, we should be ensuring that the cats get cat food, because the nutritional makeup is completely different to dog food. So cats are obligatory meat eaters, so they need a very high protein content in their food. And that's what's basically, you know, in commercial cat food, is the protein content and all the nutrients are very distinctly balanced for cats. I think maybe a little bit of environmental management here. So perhaps feeding the dog and the cat in different places so the cat can't eat the dog's food. And you know, has her own little eating station.
I bet the dog just stands back and just looks doleful.
Of course
doleful.
He does.
I'm quite surprised at this, to be honest. I would have thought the dog wouldn't let the cat anywhere near his food.
No, dogs are wet. Dogs are always looking at cats with sort of doleful, depressed eyes.
So I'm sorry I exist.
Depends on the individual dog and cat, I think. But I would always think dogs actually prefer cat food. I've rarely heard of cats liking dog food, because I think cats... food is very, very, very palatable. So it's really tasty for dogs. And I don't think dog food is quite as palatable for cats, but this cat must have a
just really
just a dog
hungry.
Food tooth. Yeah, absolutely.
So I put it down with cats. I'd say it's a sort of domination issue.
Georgia, why have you got a cat if you don't like cats?
I thought I liked cats. I thought I liked her until I had to wash my son's duvet cover five times in 1 week. Yeah. And now the whole like wee poo, cat wee poo thing dominates. And every time I walk into my house, I've got social anxiety about it. I'm like, do you think people can smell wee? Yeah. And now I've started smelling cat wee everywhere.
Yeah.
Literally everywhere. It's like it's on me.
If you're getting anxiety about it then, does that mean you're going to take more seriously the issues of pet mental health?
No, I'm so sorry. Pet mental health, it's one step too far
but
for
it's
me.
It's affecting you, Georgia.
I know.
Don't like a lot of things, but surely
I mean,
like yourself.
Maybe I'll take diazepam to deal with the fact that my cat's got anxiety.
Just don't give your cat any diazepam, whatever you do.
What if I just crunch up really fine?
No, because we do use those types of drugs for pets as well, but diazepam actually causes liver toxicity in cats. So no diazepam for the cat.
No self-medicating. James in Umskeem says, my family is going away this summer and I'll only be home in the evening. Should I worry about my cat?
So it depends a little bit on the cat. So if the cat is a very, very sociable cat, then, you know, potentially you might want to get somebody in to sort of play and spend some time with the cat. However, if the cat is very, very happy to be on its own, as many, many cats are, then as long as they have, you know, plenty of food, water, clean litter trays, they're getting checked just to make sure they're fine, you know, there's no vomiting, diarrhea in the house, that kind of thing. Cats are very, very happy being solitary. And may even enjoy a quiet, peaceful summer.
I mean, loads of us are going away over the summer. Is it a similar situation for dogs?
No. So the same doesn't apply for dogs. So dogs are hugely sociable animals and are very much used to being in a family unit or being in a, you know, that kind of environment. And they do need, you know, obviously walking more and that kind of thing. So I would say dogs definitely need a proper carer, either somebody staying in the home with them or, you know, going to a really nice kennel, something like that. I would not leave a dog alone all day.
You know, on the show yesterday, we had the guys from We Will Fix It In, and we asked them, as in, what should you do to prep your home before you go on your big holiday where you might be away for 2, 3, even 4 weeks or more? Is there anything actually people should do, as in, with their pets? Obviously, cats, obviously, people staying here, but I know a lot of people will leave their pets and take them to kind of these like animal homes, mm-hmm. in a sense. Is there any kind of preparation that people can do to get them ready? Because it's going to be a big change for them, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the good kennels offer sort of introduction days so that they can actually meet the dogs and assess their temperaments and that sort of thing. And they can assess, you know, which little group they'll best fit into when they're actually staying with them. But I would also always get your pet health checked before the summer, just to make sure that everything's okay, you know, get them weighed. That's always a good comparison pre and post summer to see whether their weight's changed.
Oh, no, in case the place doesn't feed them enough
or
something.
Or no, in case they get too fat normally.
Oh, yes. Okay, fair. Bit like me on holiday, to be honest.
Exactly. And make sure their vaccines are all up to date and all that kind of thing. And if your pets are staying at home and with a carer, make sure you've got plenty of supply of pet food so that they don't run out.
Okay, interesting as well that you mentioned about kind of like a bit of a checkup in a sense, because mm-hmm. Michelle's been in touch on 4001 saying, I've got a long-haired, 1.5-year-old male cat. He was severely starved until we found him at around 10 weeks old, and he's been with us ever since. He's due back for his 1-year-old shots, mm-hmm. and I'm getting him microchipped as well. He's also been neutered. But my question is this, I most likely sound like a crazy cat lady, but is it weird to ask for a blood test, a kind of all-round general checkup in a sense? Do you get that? Because it's not something I think you'd think about as you know,
it's definitely not something I do.
Pet owners. Is that something you'd actually do? Just a general kind of, you know, bring your pet in and just a general all-round health check?
Absolutely. It's like an MOT. You do not sound like a crazy cat lady. And yes, we do that. We do recommend annual blood checks. This cat, you said it was a stray, but so it might also be worth getting an FIV test. So that's a feline AIDS test. It's very unlikely that the cat might have it. However, if it was a stray cat, it may have picked up FIV from its mum. So that's a good thing to check for, but that's not an annual thing. That's just a one-off thing. But yeah, absolutely. We recommend blood tests before any kind of anaesthesia or surgical procedures. We also recommend it for older pets, senior pets, once a year as a must. But I give my, all my pets have an annual blood test just to make sure kidneys, liver, you know, everything's working as it should be, that we're not picking up anything that's untoward. So yeah, no, great question.
So when I'm researching in preparation for this program, and I keep my eye out for Pets and Vets story, because they don't necessarily fall into my normal sort of reading pattern, if I'm honest. I work as a journalist. I have to read about the news. So I'm not reading sort of Pets Today or anything like that. I don't know if that publication exists. But on my Instagram feed recently, mm-hmm. a story came up that said, apparently there's a new fashionable pet in town. Hedgehogs are the new alpacas. Now, I don't know anyone who owns an alpaca, so I'm not sure where this story comes from. But hedgehogs, I can imagine people in flats in the marina, or, you know, we have tortoises. I can imagine people having hedgehogs. And in fact, there is one hedgehog that's become a social media star. He's called Lionel the Hog. You can follow him on Instagram. He is indeed very cute. Mm-hmm. And I'm tempted, except of course it would really annoy my cat. She'd wee everywhere after the result of that. And who knows, where do hedgehogs wee? Anyway, does anyone have them here? Have hedgehogs come over to the UAE yet?
Yeah, so I haven't seen any hedgehogs in the clinic, and I would probably advise against a hedgehog as a pet.
No.
Hedgehogs are, they're wildlife, and in the UK they're actually protected wildlife species, so I don't think they'd make great pets. And I, you know, they have a very specific habitat, which is usually kind of grass, woodlands, trees, that sort of thing, which you don't find too much of in the UAE. And it's a typical case, isn't it, because it looks cute.
He does look cute.
Exactly.
He does this bowl thing. You can sort of hold him in a prickly ball, and he's got a little snout.
Yeah, but the fact that he's in a prickly ball means that he's defending himself and not particularly happy. So, yes.
Poor Lionel.
I know. Not. And I think...
Listen, you know, to you now. Pretend to care about his mental health,
I don't
Georgia.
Care about, yeah, I don't care about Lionel. He looks cute. He's performing
that
a task.
That easy size as well, aren't they? I think that's why they appeal to people. But again, my recommendation would not to have a hedgehog as a pet. Yeah.
I had a Lebanese friend who kept a rabbit in her flat, mm-hmm. and she claimed that said rabbit had been trained to wee and poo in certain places.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Rabbits do make very good indoor pets, and you can toilet train rabbits, and they'll use a litter tray like a cat.
No. How do you train them? Do you just put them in the tray a lot?
What, sorry. Little carrots here and there?
I hit my mic pretending to put a rabbit in a tray. Invisible rabbit in tray. On the radio as well. I mean, it's so helpful, that gesture.
So rabbits aren't as instinctual as cats with litter trays, so you do actually have to train them. But it would be the same as training a dog to go to the toilet outside. So whenever you think the rabbit needs a wee, you know, you'd put it in the litter tray, and then when it did the wee in the litter tray, you would reward it with, you know, with a piece of carrot or with something yummy and tasty. So, yeah, it's all positive reinforcement. It works the same for all species of animals, whether they're dolphins or dogs or rabbits. So, yeah, you can definitely train a rabbit to use a litter tray.
I'm just pleased that at least one thing remains certain, that you do feed carrots to rabbits, because I remember having a conversation, I think it was with you, where I discovered that you're not meant to give bones to dogs.
Correct.
Yeah, that traumatized me for several weeks. It was literally for days afterwards. I was going out on play dates with my friends and entertaining the children. I'd be like, do you know you're not meant to give bones to dogs? And they'd be like, yeah, I don't care. We're talking about other stuff now. I was like, no, you're not meant to. This is fascinating. Mm-hmm. Who knew? But rabbits and carrots, that's still fine.
From Marwan saying that we do have hedgehogs here in the desert. They are in the wild. I've never heard about this before. I've never seen one here. But apparently that is the case as well. So
we have
checking this out.
We
have fact checked it. So according to the Dubai Desert Conservation Reserve, we have Brandt's hedgehog, which is covered with black fur. It's got sharp black tipped spines, providing an overall black appearance. And it's basically found along the east of the Arabian Peninsula in both the UAE and Oman. It prefers mountain oases and wadi systems with plenty of vegetation. And then another breed of hedgehog we have is the Ethiopian hedgehog, which is widely distributed across the Middle East, occupying a range of habitats from open desert lowlands to vegetated mountain wadis. But like you say, these are wildlife animals. So even though hedgehogs might be the new craze for certain people when it comes to pets, Dr. Katrin, they are wildlife after all.
Absolutely. And a wildlife needs to stay in the wild.
Yeah, don't go stealing hedgehogs, people.
No.
If you can find one, don't go stealing it. Also, the Ethiopian ones, tempted to say, they must have walked quite a long way.
And have to swim. a large portion
of the
journey.
Stop testing my geography, Danny Norton. Outrageous. Only just figuring out where I am on the map. Lovely question just come in as well. I'm just going to look on our other system to see whether there's a name. No, there isn't. Anonymous message. Is it true, Dr. Katrin, that you don't feed cats chocolate or milk?
Yeah, so the chocolate thing...
Why would you feed your cat chocolate?
Well, a lot of people...
Apropos of nothing.
I know. A lot of people want to give their pets treats.
Yes.
And obviously, because we like chocolate as a treat, then, you know, it kind of follows that we would like to give chocolate to our pets as a treat. But we absolutely should not do that. In particular, we should not be giving chocolate to dogs.
It kills them, doesn't
it? Absolutely.
They have to have their stomach pumped.
Yeah. Or cats, for that matter. But it's particularly toxic for dogs. And the darker the chocolate, so the higher the cocoa content, the more toxic it is.
Frank, the sausage dog. The greedy sausage dog, who belonged to my friend James, ate an entire dark chocolate Easter egg that he snuffled out of a cupboard that he opened with his nose.
Oh, no.
And he didn't die. He had to have a very expensive stomach pumping operation.
Absolutely. We had another sausage dog, believe it or not.
They're greedy sausages, those.
It was on Christmas Day, came into the clinic as an emergency because she had eaten a whole bar of dark Lindt chocolate. And same thing, we had to give her a very, very nasty medication that makes them vomit. That only works if you get them early enough. But she vomited up a whole bar of Lindt chocolate.
I've been there.
On Christmas Day.
I've been there. We used to have our former German Shepherd, and we had a Springer Spaniel.
Everyone's
as well.
Everyone's got a dog chocolate eating story. It's brilliant.
Yeah, so one Easter. We got back home after going to my grandparents for dinner, and our dogs had gotten into my stash of chocolate eggs.
Oh no!
So I had 7 that year, and this is how 7. Distinct it is. I remember how the number of the eggs that I had, and they got in kind of, you know, cardboard box everywhere, mess everywhere. Of course, they'd already been sick from it all. We were just thankful they didn't get into my sister's room because she got 23 eggs that year.
Oh God! So what is going on in your family?
A lot worse with that. So yeah it was a messy time. And yeah, fortunately the German Shepherd was fine. We had to take the Springer Spaniel to go and get the stomach pumped.
It's really an emergency situation.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And as for cats with milk, yeah, absolutely. So cats don't have the enzyme to break down the lactose in cow's milk. So cow's milk is a big no-no for cats. Any milk, to be honest with you. So fresh water for drinking only. You can get special cat milk, which is sort of made for cats, which you can give. And for kittens, you can get specially formulated kitten milk if you want to feed kittens.
How on earth has that whole thing with cats drinking milk in cartoons come about then? Because Disney's got, or whoever invented the first cartoons, has got a lot to answer for, because I have definitely grown up thinking cats drink milk.
Yeah.
And they definitely, because they will drink it, but they shouldn't.
Exactly. It's just one of many, many, many myths that surround pet
dogs
care
and
pet health. Yeah.
Dogs
many
and
myths around milk as well, but that's a subject for another day.
Danny the vegan's going to get on these, getting on the milk subject. Totally fair enough. I want to talk to you about emotional support.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say vehicles then, but it's Pets and Vets program. So it is emotional support vets. Emotional pets. Support pets.
We are sometimes emotional support vets too.
But you've supported me through the cat wee incident. Lovely message here saying, hello, my 9-year-old mixed breed dog has a mast cell tumour removed from the front of her paw on Thursday. We were told to take the bandage off today. We got the tape cut off, but the gauze wrapped around the wound has hardened from bleeding and we don't know how to get it off without hurting her. This is from Priya. Poor dog.
So my best advice would be to go and get the bandage taken off at the veterinary clinic. So if it's been seeping or oozing that much, I'm sure your vet would want to have a look at the wound that's underneath. Also, mast cell tumours can be quite aggressive tumours. So it's possible that the wound is quite large because you need to get sort of clear margins. So you need to kind of excise the masses quite extensively. So I would definitely suggest getting this dressing taken off at the veterinary clinic. It might need to be redressed as well if it's been seeping that much.
And just one here as well, continuing our hedgehog theme in the UAE as well. No name on it, but saying I've seen hedgehogs several times at the right market at Pet Corner.
I'm afraid so have I. I didn't want to bring it up, but my children really liked them and held them. They're about 6. And they hide. They hide under it. They give them a cave that they hide under. But then you are allowed to hold them. They didn't seem to mind that much. They didn't bite.
Well, no, because they're just trying to roll themselves into themselves. A ball to protect themselves. Exactly, Danny. Mm. Yeah.
Well, nice one from Elaine. Anyway, that's kind of up it a little bit. You know, positive one from Elaine.
But hang on a sec. So if I take my children to a pet thing, I shouldn't let them play with the hedgehogs because that's not nice.
It's not great for the hedgehogs, and also potentially not great for your kids because hedgehogs carry lots and lots of parasites such as fleas and ticks. So, I wouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah, and Elaine's saying as well, just to say to listeners to leave water out when you can in a place with shade for birds and strays, especially important this time of year.
Absolutely. We're telling everybody that, you know, the birds really struggle. So, yeah, if you can, leave a little Tupperware or a little something with water and the birds will thank you for it.
Do you know, I am doing that already in my I'm hoping to show that I do have animal loving sides. I am already putting out water. And another message coming in about our milk subject, our traumatizing milk subject. It says, blame Tom and Jerry. Tom was drinking milk the whole time. I knew it. That has sunk so deep into my consciousness.
Exactly.
It's because I was watching at age 4. So coming up, we're talking about emotional support pets.
Jane's been in saying, in touch to 4001, saying, I've taken to clipping my own dog called Monica because she gets so stressed going to the groomers. She's a terrier cross and normally I do a good job, but the 3mm clipper broke, so I had to use the clippers without a guard. As a result of this, she's looking rather bald in certain areas. Should I worry about her getting sunburned? in this current heat in our summer?
Yeah, good, really good question. So first of all, I want to say, Jane, well done for clipping your dog yourself, especially if she's a little bit scared of the groomers. I think, we have so many great groomers in this country, but it's not always a super pleasant experience for the dog. So that's a big thumbs up. And yes, definitely. I would say, a dog's fur does lend quite a lot of protection, especially against the sun rays. So if there are some bald patches here and there, I would definitely advise using sun factor or sunscreen. Yeah, high factor.
A lovely message from Joan just come in. Hello, everybody. Lovely to hear the show as always. A quick question on my lovely Roxy, who is a crossbreed between a pug and a beagle. Yeah, mm-hmm. It says Ugg, but I'm going to go with pug and yep. beagle. She's been scooting her bum on the floor. I treated her with antibiotics, worm tablets and steroids provided by the vet and anal glands emptied. By the way, I'm just laughing, Joan, not because of your question, but because I'd never thought in my career in radio that I would be saying scooting her bum on the floor on the radio. It's only 2 weeks since all this treatment. And again, Roxy is doing it again. Otherwise, she is perfectly healthy and happy. Would greatly appreciate your advice. Many thanks.
Okay. My initial few things would have been as well, deworming and emptying of anal glands. Now, what can sometimes happen with the anal glands is they can get inflamed, in particular after they've been emptied, and also they can get chronically inflamed. So it may well be that she does have a chronic irritation there. And if it did get better on the treatment, that seems to suggest that, possibly there is some inflammation there because the steroids would be very good for the inflammation. So if she's better on treatment and then worse off treatment, that would mean probably inflammation. So I would go back to your vet and let them have a look. Now, it is possible to surgically remove anal glands. It's quite a big operation. Sometimes it can be the only thing that provides relief, but your vet will probably explore all other avenues first before going down that route. There are also other types of anti-inflammatories that they can stay on for longer than steroids. We never want to keep them on steroids for too long. So, take her back to the vet and see what the suggestions are.
One person who is going to the vet is Sarah as well, who says she's got an appointment for next week, but she's starting to feel like it's a bit of an emergency. She says, my cat won't eat any cat food. I thought he had a tooth issue, so started feeding him soft food and he really enjoyed that for a while. But yesterday he wouldn't eat his canned food. He stole pizza off the counter later last night. Today I even heated his canned food up and sprinkled catnip on it and he wouldn't touch it, but he showed interest in mashed potatoes, so I let him have some because I let him have some of these mashed potatoes because I really don't want him starving. Should I call the vet and tell him it's an emergency? He's around 13 or 14 years old. I want to say he's very active and still lively. He just won't eat anything that's meant for a cat and he's growing quite skinny. I don't want to feed him human food either, obviously, as cats need different nutrients, which is something that you alluded to before.
Yeah. So the big red flag for me here is the cat's age. And also if he's previously, eaten normally, eaten cat food, and all of a sudden he stopped eating cat food at that age, I would most definitely go to the vet sooner rather than later, because there could be some kind of underlying metabolic issue. It could be an overactive thyroid. Also, cats eating food that aren't really intended for them or that they wouldn't normally do is quite concerning. It's something that we call picker. So when cats start to eat sort of objects or things that they shouldn't normally eat. I would say don't wait too long. I would hurry up and go to the vet.
So the other big topic that we've been talking about, or that I want to talk to you about, is emotional support pets. Mm-hmm. Because there's this big thing in the US where they've become quite common, where some people are suggesting that people are using it as an excuse. So they want to have a pet. So they're saying, oh, it's my emotional support pet. I can't handle my anxiety without it. I'm a bit cynical. What is the difference between emotional support pet and me and my cat?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've known for a long, long time that pets can be really beneficial to people's health. So there have been lots of studies and lots of research done on pets actually lowering blood pressure, lowering cholesterol levels. So there's been a lot of work done surrounding sort of cardiovascular disease. We also know that there are, dogs that can predict seizures, dogs that can, help with diabetic comas and so on. And so more recently, we've also been seeing pets as emotional support pets. So people that do suffer from anxiety to depression, that kind of thing, find it very, very comforting to have their support animal by their side. Now, I would agree that in the US, it has been a little bit abused, the whole emotional support pet. So we see it in particular with pets in pet relocation. So there are particular times of the year where some breeds of pet can't travel, and some people are using the emotional support angle to try and get their pets to travel. So that's where we sort of see it being abused a little bit. The other things I wouldn't be able to comment on too much, but yeah, no, emotional support pets are a thing. I do believe when it's done correctly, they're great, and I do believe they've helped many, many people deal with mental and emotional health issues. But it's always obviously something that can be abused, unfortunately, as well.
Sumit has sent in a message saying, my pug Lola keeps getting some sort of urinary tract infection and pees blood clots. This has increased since she was spayed, and it's the second instance this year.
Oh, dear. Okay.
That doesn't sound good, does it?
Yeah. So I think definitely further workup needed here. So x-rays and ultrasonography of the bladder and the urinary tract, and, you know, some blood tests. Yeah, so it requires further veterinary workup, definitely.
Amazing. We've reached the end of our programme. Dr. Katrin, thank you so much
for
coming in.
Thank you. It's been a really interesting show today. I've really enjoyed myself.
It has been a really wild one.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.